This is the SF Signal Podcast. I am your host. My name is Patrick Hester. I am an author, a blogger, and a Hugo Award winner. And tonight, I have gathered folks to talk about stuff. Again, it must be Monday. And let's go to the people that we have on this week. I actually sent out an email and a bunch of people replied. And these are the ones who could actually afford the bribe. So we're going to start with someone who hasn't been on in quite some time. He's been off doing his own thing on Wednesdays with Patterson and Keish. And that would be Mr. John Stevens.
That's me, John Stevens. I am, what am I? I'm a writer. Mm-hmm. And I've had a couple of stories published. I am a regular columnist for SF Signal. Mm-hmm. I do lots of writing, and I also am on a what has evolved into a rival podcast, The Three Horsemen, which you can also hear on SF Signal because everybody is now on SF Signal. Everybody.
Well,
SF Signal is expanding to take over the whole sci-fi blogonet.
And there's different folks out there who talk about having rival podcasts, and to be honest with you, it's really cute.
Oh, is it?
I left the awkward pause there for you. Hey, you know what? I think the more podcasts, the merrier. So,
I think it'd be great to have more. I mean, we've got these. We've got Crossing the Gulf with the Karens.
Yep.
So do you guys ever do podcast crossovers?
Stuff? We've talked about it. I've talked about it.
Superman versus the X-Men podcasts.
Actually, my idea was that. See, when I was younger, I collected comic books, mm-hmm. and I had about a $300 a month habit. That I have since kicked. But during that time is when they really got into the Mega Marvel crossovers kind of stuff, you know. The first big crossover they did was Secret Wars. And you know what? Before I even go into that. So that's John. Sarah, why don't you say hello?
Hi. this is Sarah again. And I run Bookworm Blues, and I annoy people on Twitter and Facebook, and I do Special Needs and Strange Worlds on SF Signal.
Yes, and it's all awesome stuff. And we also have Django.
Hi, I'm Django. You know, for those who missed me last week, I'm a fantasy author. My book, The Thousand Names, is out this year, is already out as of this year. And it's a military fantasy. My new book, The Forbidden Library, comes out in April. And that's children's fantasy. And I'm also writing an anime column for SF Signal called Lost in Anime Land.
Very cool. And just as it's just kind of a funny, we talk about crossovers. Over on Functional Nerds, we had Brian McClellan on. And when we did our picks of the week, your book was his pick.
I noticed that. He tweeted about it, and I was like, now I have to listen to Functional Nerds.
Oh, now you have to listen to it?
Tragically. To find out if he just said, I'm talking about Django Wexler, and I had to find out if he was trashing me or what. But I'm glad he enjoyed it. You know, it's funny because I actually had a kind of similar reaction. You know, he said he was glad that our books weren't too similar, and I had the same thing because I'm like, you know, when my book came out, it was like, oh God, you know, someone else has done the exact same thing as me. What am I going to do? But it's not exactly the same. So,
right.
Plus, he's awesome, and his book is really good.
So, back to the crossover thing. So, my first experience with any sort of crossover was Marvel's Secret War. And mm-hmm. it didn't really cross over with existing books. What they did was they published a standalone miniseries. And they took all the heroes and the villains from the Marvel Universe off to the Beyonders planet where they had to fight. Mm-hmm. Okay? So that was my first experience. Then they decided that they could cross over one story into multiple books. And so, like, you had the Fall of the Mutants, which crossed over to every mutant book in the Marvel catalog, and plus friggin' Power Pack.
And the, you know, I have to think that the reasoning behind this had a lot to do with, like, hey, if we do this story, we can get people to buy multiple
Power Pack.
Books per
yes.
month.
Yes, if they do this, then you can force people to buy Power Pack, which is a crappy book that no one wants to read.
Right.
And then it just grew from there. And before you know it, you've got, you know, X-Men crossing over with Avengers. And you have to basically buy every single book in the Marvel catalog in order to get the whole story. And then you had in DC, they would do the same kind of thing, but they would also have the limited series plus the mega crossovers. So now you have to buy every book in the Batman family series of books plus this extra little mini series that's only coming out once every, you know, 2.5 months or something. You get a new episode of that. So it was this whole mega crossover thing. So my suggestion at Worldcon, and I talked with Skippy and Fanti about this, is what we should do is we should record an entire podcast episode, but then split it up into pieces and sprinkle those pieces amongst other podcasts all across the landscape. And the only way you can get the entire episode is to listen to all of those podcasts and download them all.
That'd be pretty good. We could do a kind of a Riddler thing where we have some like elaborate riddle and we give out clues on each of the different podcasts.
Well, here's the thing. If we did it, we would also have to include Chris Garcia's podcast, which means you would have to subscribe to his cassette tape podcast in order to get it. Yeah.
Very devious.
Yes. So that was my idea for so that's the kind of the concept of the mega crossover. I think the only way to do it is to get all the podcasters together in one room somewhere, and then turn on the gas. I mean, and then record. So anyway, how's everybody doing? We're having a good week. Oh, there's the awkward silence.
The silence. I've been pretty good. I'm starting the first round of edits on my second children's book, which is not scheduled to come out until 2015, but apparently it needs to be done now.
Yes.
So
welcome to publishing.
I know. That was the thing that startled me. And children's publishing is way further in advance than even the other one.
Hmm.
So that's my, you know, it's become my world for the past three or four days.
By the time your book comes out, the kids have grown up.
That is possible, actually. The people I'm currently targeting are going to be adults by the time the series is done.
Wow.
It's the J.K. Rowling strategy.
Now, John, how's things going in John Stevens land?
It's a fairy tale through and through. It's going all right. It's going all right. I think some people around here know that I work at a bookstore, and that's. Yeah. That is my job, and it is also my burden.
And your passion.
And my passion and my burden, my blessing and my curse. It's like I'm Spider-Man, and that's what I have to deal with.
Spider-Man.
But it's going all right, and trying to work on two books at the same time, and that's really not a very bright idea. Because one of them involves reading about neuroscience, and the other one about anarchism, and... it's remarkable how those are really divergent areas of inquiry.
Yeah, do you ever get them mixed up?
Be careful of their fuse.
When I was growing up in Fresno, I had my mom had bought me this little black and white television, a little Curtis Mathis black and white TV, and I would sit in my room on the floor with my back against the bed, and the only light that would be on would be that TV. And being from a Southern family, we always had sweet tea in the house. And being a lazy teenage boy, I would always have multiple cups sitting around my bedroom that had various levels of remnant sweet tea in them. And I remember I had a couple of glasses on top of the TV, and one was a fresh glass and one had been sitting there for about a week and a half. And you talk about the having the two different books, and the reason I'm going down this road is because I was asking if you ever mixed them up. I was sitting there, it was very dark, I had the TV on, I couldn't tell which cup it was. I grabbed a cup, I took a swig, and I thought, tea's not supposed to be chunky.
Oh God.
Oh, I didn't need to hear that.
Oh my God.
So you ever get the two books mixed up and you're like, oh man, I need to read about anarchy. And then it's not anarchy.
I don't know. White matter connections are pretty trippy. So, you know.
Yeah. It's Sarah, just anarchy up there in the cerebral cortex.
Sarah, have you taken any really cool pictures this week?
Today I did a bunch of food photography involving oatmeal. And that was fun. But probably not going to interest anybody but cooking magazines. So
is that why Chuck Wendig was talking about oatmeal on Facebook?
I'm not sure. I didn't notice.
I did see him say, and I was like, why is Chuck Wendig talking about oatmeal?
Maybe. I didn't notice.
You know, I actually have a bone to pick with him. He totally stole my social media one night. Which was, I tweeted the picture of the chocolate-covered potato chips that are being sold exclusively at Target. And he went to Facebook and started talking about it. And, of course, he immediately gets like 100 people commenting about it. I'm like, hey, Wendig, that was mine.
David Brin does that to me. Like I'll link something and he'll just like post it without any attribution or anything. And I'm like, hey, cool. David Brin reads my Twitter and he's ripping me off.
Well, I know that Wendig is coming. He's going to be one of the guest speakers at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference in April. And so I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to go down there, hang out with him, take him up on a 14er and then just leave him there. And that'll teach him not to steal my social media.
Ooh. Hey, you show him. And then walk away and snap your fingers, you know, like you're all sassy. Yeah, exactly.
And you got to do the head thing.
In case David Brin is listening, I don't mind at all.
All right. We do have a topic before I get to the topic, I'm curious, John, and John already mentioned a couple books, but John, what are the books specifically that you're reading right now?
Okay. Are we going to do that now?
Yeah.
Okay.
The order of the universe has been disrupted.
It is because on Horseman we do that last. So I'm you've thrown me. Uh-huh. What am I reading right now? Well, I'm also trying not to duplicate what I talked about just a couple of days ago on another podcast.
Okay.
But I will say is I'm still working my way through Molly Tanzer's A Pretty Mouth.
Oh, I just met Molly.
You just met Molly?
I met her at Mile High Con.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
She's very awesome.
Uh huh. I follow her in a couple different social streams.
Molly, Molly the Tans. Nice. Molly the Tans, I think, on Twitter.
That's right. And I'm about halfway through Pretty Mouth. It's a collection of short stories. The best way to describe it is, you know, P.G. Wodehouse meets, you know, Lovecraft, basically.
That sounds pretty good.
It may be a better idea in theory. The execution is a little hard. A couple of the stories are quite good that I've read so far. A couple are okay. There's no poor stories. They're all at least good, but it's you're trying to take two things that are in very, very different and try to, and she's not just trying to do a mashup. She's actually trying to take the strengths of both and combine them and what she really wants to enhance is she wants to kind of give you a weird familiarity to lure you into the unease. Mm-hmm. And it's not an easy task to do. And but the stories that work that I've read so far are quite good. So I'm kind of happy about that. And I'm reading, what is that book called? Oh, it's I can't see it from here. Oh my God. but I'm reading a book on the basically the neuroscience of storytelling and how. When people, as opposed to reading, when people tell stories and formulate stories, how that works in the brain. Because part of the thesis for the nonfiction book I'm reading is that reading is a participatory act, which we all know because we read. But the way that we participate has some resonance with the way that we ourselves tell stories and formulate theory of mind about the world. So I'm reading a lot of stuff, not just on reading itself, but on theory of mind and the way that neuroscience is trying to explain how different parts of the brain work together, not just to produce reading comprehension, but the synthesizing process that results in you understanding a story and then sort of casting it back onto the written page itself.
Okay, this is why... I said I needed a dictionary and a thesaurus whenever editing any of John's posts on SF Signal. You're so deep. I'm imagining you right now, like sitting there in a leather chair with a tweed like sweater or vest or something. You know, you got your pipe in one hand, a book in the other. There's the fireplace going in the background.
Oh, that'd be bad. I'd kill the raccoon that's in there right now.
Now, what was Molly's book?
A Pretty Mouse.
A Pretty Mouse. And what was the collection?
What do you mean? That's what it's called.
Oh, that's the collection?
Yeah, Molly's collection is called A Pretty Mouse.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay.
And it's got a great picture on the front of like this sort of desiccated creature. It looks vaguely like H.P. Lovecraft.
But you can't see the name of the neuroscience book.
But I can't see the name of the neuroscience book.
That's okay.
It's on the third stack. It's very far away.
Okay. Now
there's two closer stacks of books I'm supposed to be reading, and then there's the third stack.
Now, I promise our listeners, we do have a main topic, but I wanted to talk about books here for a second first. So, Sarah, I know that you like to read books to your kid.
Yes.
While you're putting in her bed and kind of stuff, and that's how you get through so many different books. What are you reading right now?
Okay. I'm a mood reader, so I generally have about a six going, but today I worked on three, so I'll just list off those three. Dreamweaver by C.S. Friedman. It is a young adult crossover that should be coming out in February. And Something More Than Night by Ian Tregillis. I don't know how you say his last name, so I'm sorry.
I know Ian.
Did I say that right?
Yeah, Tregillis
is right.
Tregillis, okay. Yeah.
And the name of it was Something...
Something More Than Night. Okay. It's coming out next month.
Very cool. I was going to ask if that was new. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's new. It's very different than anything else I've read from him, but it's still really good.
I met Ian at Mile High Con. He lost his fiance and was trying to find her.
Oh.
And he is actually an upcoming guest on the Functional Nerds. So plug for the other podcast there. Go ahead.
And I'm reading A Different Kingdom by Paul Kearney.
And what's that one about?
It is about a boy, young adult kid. He's 13 when it all happens, but he lives in Northern Ireland in the 50s, and he kind of slips into this other reality. It's so well written. The story's taken a little while to move. It's a lot of buildup, but it's finally starting to go, and it's really absorbing. But I could just read a book of his landscape descriptions for the rest of my life. It's just fantastic. I never read anything like it. I love it. So.
Well, and with the thought in mind of you sitting down and reading to your kid, I know that holidays are coming up, and parents are probably looking for things that they could read to their kid while they're getting them, you know, or kids. So I got two short story collections that I suggested one of them to you just a moment ago before we started recording, Rigor Mortis. Which is just a lovely family-friendly collection of short stories. And then, of course, Cthulhu Erotica from Dagon Books. I think those two would be great. It won't scar your children, I promise.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. She'll love that. That's great.
Django, what are you reading right now?
I just finished a great collection of stories from Kat Rambo called Near Plus Far. I don't know if you guys know Kat, but she's a short story writer who it happens to be a friend of mine. She lives here in Seattle. And I had like never read any of her work before after we became friends. And so I finally got her book, and I'm like, man, I hope this is really good, because otherwise I'm going to have to like lie a lot. But it turns out it's really good. So I was like, awesome. Perfect. Everything worked out perfectly. But yeah, I highly recommend it. It's cool. It's a cool book too. It's got the old Ace Doubles formatting where you flip it over to read the back.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just some fantastic stories in there. So I finished that, and now I'm reading The Troop. Robert Bennett. I think Robert Bennett.
Robert Jackson Bennett.
Yeah, Jackson which is good. You know, it's solid. I think I'm about 40 pages from the end.
Look at me all remembering author names without even DiNardo helping me. Wow. Sorry, I was impressed with myself.
But yeah, but both of those have been pretty good. It's been a good week for books.
Very cool. Yeah, we know Kat. We've had Kat on the podcast before.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, you need to go back. And now that you're a member of the team, you need to actually go back to start with episode number one and just start listening.
Oh, my God. I might die all the way through.
It's only what, like 200, it's probably about 240 hours So yeah, you can knock that out pretty quick.
I'll get right to work on that after I finish, you know, my list of audiobooks, which is 1,000 hours long.
If you search Kat, you'll see she was on a couple of different podcasts with us. So she's a lot of fun. She told me at WorldCon she had multicolored hair, different colors, and she said it's because there was no consensus on a single color that she should pick this year.
She held an internet vote, I think.
Yes, and there was no consensus, so she ended up just doing all the colors, which is pretty cool.
It's great. It makes her easy to pick out in a crowd.
Mm-hmm. One of the best moderators on a panel I've ever had, so...
Yes,
She's great. Okay, so all good choices. Let's take a look at our topic this week. I'm not stalling while I pull it up, I promise. Let's see here. Which SF and F book that you love would you like to see made into a movie? And which one do you really hope never gets made because you're afraid they'll ruin it? Green Lantern.
Too late.
let's start with Django.
Oh boy. So okay, the first question about the question is, does it have to be a movie or can it be an HBO TV
show? It could be an HBO TV show. It could be any kind of we'll say visual medium. It could be an animated movie, it could be a regular movie, okay. It could be a TV show.
Or animated
TV
movie
show. Yeah. Great. Yeah.
There's movie. I could do the Joe Abercrombie series would be fantastic as a TV series. So that's the one that starts with the blade itself.
Yes. Now, would you want that on NBC?
No, I think HBO would be ideal, or some Netflix or somewhere
I will throw out there Stars.
Stars?
They're the ones that did,
they did that
Spartacus
series?
Yes.
Yeah, I never watched that.
Oh, that was good.
The first season was quite good.
Yeah. As for things that I hope they don't make into movies, things that have really complicated plots are very difficult to make into movies, and things that, you know, don't visualize well. So a lot of politics, like, well, the problem is every time I think of something, I think, well, maybe they could do it. I was just thinking about Hilary Mantel's Wolf Hall, and I'm like, that would make a terrible movie. But man, with the right cast and a TV series, you could knock that out of the park. Get a bunch of really great English actors. That would be fantastic.
They do that. It's called The Tudors, man.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
and that guy's now playing Dracula.
Yes,
that's right.
I haven't watched that yet either. I'm still catching up on Legend of Korra. What?
They finally had some good episodes of that.
I know. The first like half of this season was crummy, and then it got good again.
I'm just curious, could you guys hear the gigantic bang above me?
No.
Someone dropped something. Anyway. Yes, go ahead.
So I guess that's my answer. Would be okay. The one I would most like to see would be the first Law series. Although they are already doing a graphic novel of that, so maybe it's not that important. I haven't read through the graphic novel because they're not like finished with it, so I was like, yeah, I'll wait till it's done.
Yeah, I typically wait for the actual graphic novels to come out in volume.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think they've done that yet. They're just doing the comic book right now, right?
Yeah. Well, and I find when they come out with it like a page at a time, I'm impatient. So it's like I might as well wait until, you know, they come out with something that's finished. I could be like, all right. But yeah, it's funny when people ask me, like, would you like your book to be a movie? And I'm like, no. Actually, okay, there's my thing about like what I don't want made into an actual movie because it would ruin it, would be The Thousand Names. It's just too much to fit in 2 hours. If they wanted to make like an animated series or I guess an HBO series, although it'd be very expensive with all those soldiers, then sure. But like a movie, I don't think you could really do it.
What they do is they contract with Weta. Weta has the software that they use to do the Lord of the Rings with all the big battle scenes. Yeah, that's how they get all their soldiers.
Yeah, I could see that. Can't do a close up though, or you realize it's all the same guy copy pasted 1,000 times.
Oh my God, it's Star Wars.
It is Star Wars.
So, are you good?
I'm good. That's what I've got.
Sarah.
All right.
How about the one you do want to see first?
Okay, I thought of a few. I wasn't gonna do this podcast because I usually don't give a crap about movies or TV. I just don't care. But I started thinking about it for Special Needs and Strange Worlds, and I thought, what book that is science fiction or fantasy and features disabled people or something like that would be a cool movie, because there just aren't many. I can't even think of one. There's probably some out there, but I honestly can't think of it. And the book I came up with for that was Apollo's Outcast by Alan Steele. And it's a young adult book. I liked it. It's about the boy who's on Earth and then he moves to the moon and he kind of saves the day. But I think that would be a good movie for people. And the other one I was thinking of for just mainstream stuff, I think The Alchemist of Souls by Anne Lyle would be probably a good movie. So those are my two.
Go ahead.
I could get behind Alchemist of Souls. You need a heck of a cast to pull it off, I think, but it would be great.
Yeah, I think it would be really good.
Very cool. And so those are your picks for. What are your picks against?
Okay. For against, it's just a general plea to everyone in Hollywood. Please, for the love of God, stop making Stephen King movies. They don't work. They ruin every one of his books, and they just piss me off. So just stop. And the underscore for that would be, please don't ruin his son's books. Nosferatu, yeah. Heart-Shaped Box, they do not need to be made into movies. And the other one I thought of is anything Stephen Erickson has ever written. It's just too much.
It's too complicated.
Exactly.
So are there really no Stephen King movies that you like? I'm trying to think of any of the ones that I like. Maybe The Fog.
I hate them all. I just think they're all laughable. I started watching Under the Dome, and like three episodes in, I was throwing up. It's just horrible. They ruin everything.
The Fog has probably the most brutal ending of a movie ever.
You mean The Mist?
Is it The Mist or The Fog? The one where they're... It's The Mist. Okay, yeah.
The one they totally screwed up? Yes, that's The Mist.
I don't know. How did they screw it up?
The way that they did the ending is completely different than the story.
I know, but Stephen King said he liked the movie ending better.
Well, he also said
ending is just like a kick in the nuts. It's horrible.
He also said he agreed with all the changes to Under the Dome for television.
Oh, well...
So
maybe he doesn't know what he's talking about then.
There you have it, sports fans.
Sorry, I just find that amusing. Yeah, here's the Under the Dome story for you, Sarah. My mom saw that it was coming on TV, and she really wanted to watch it, but she knew it was based on a book, so she went out and she bought the book. And as the time was ticking down to the show coming on, I kept telling her how many days she had left to finish reading the book. And she's kind of a slow reader. So, you know, she's probably 2 weeks, about 2 weeks of reading in, she was on chapter 3. And so when the show comes on, she's still reading the book. And I would actually watch her watch the show, because she would look at the book and she would watch the show and look at the book and watch the show. And you could see the wheels were turning in her head. But she was kind of chewing on it, and she hadn't said anything yet. And about the fourth episode in, she says to me, "This doesn't make any sense at all." And I said, "What's wrong?" And I already knew because I looked it up. She says, "It's completely different from the book. It's not making any sense." And I said, "Yeah, I know." She goes, "Well, why'd they do that?" And I said, "Well, Stephen King told him it was okay." Well, that just pissed her off. So she stopped watching it.
It's just a horrible show. I don't know. It's awful.
Can we stop? If we're making pleas, can we make them please stop making Philip K. Dick movies also? Because those never come out. Like, they only come out well when some director, like, I mean, Blade Runner was good, but they just completely ignored his book. So, you know.
So you do know that there the only two people in the world who didn't like or who didn't care for Blade Runner are associated with SF Signal.
Really?
And I'm one of them.
Really?
Blade Runner. And a certain bagel fetishist as well.
So boring.
Yeah, I can see it.
It's kind of like, you know, you're super excited and you sit down to watch Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Oh, yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, it's the line from Big Bang Theory when Sheldon looks at Amy and says, "Have you ever seen Star Trek the Motion Picture?" "No, don't. It's not worth it." And he's a Star Trek fan.
Yeah. Who was it that said, "I like Star Trek the Motion Picture because, you know, if I have to go to the bathroom, I can get up and go and come back and the same scene will still be going and nothing will have happened."
V'ger needs its creator.
I guess so. Clearly.
All right, John. What you got for us? What are your yes you'd like to see made?
What would I like to see made? Well, I would like to see Kim Stanley Robinson's Three Californias made into a series of movies. Okay. And the reason is, when I was thinking about this, I came up with a lot of stuff that I thought, that might be interesting, that might be interesting, that might be interesting. But it occurred to me that if I'm going to see a movie or a series of movies about a book that I love, I want something that's going to not just be challenging in terms of the story itself, but in attempting to communicate the themes of the story and try to get across some of what the original author was trying to do. So, in essence, unlike all the Philip K. Dick movies. I try to think of something that, I eliminated a bunch of books that were sort of, you know, quote unquote, literarily complex or such, because I wanted something that could be transposed to the screen without a huge amount of effort. But they were still going to be really, you know, interesting and engaging. And I thought about this because what's great about the Three Californias trilogy is that for those of you who haven't read it, and you really should, it's Kim Stanley Robinson's take on the future in three variations in the same location. And actually with some similarities of novel structure and character placement and stuff like that. Each novel involves a young man who's sort of at a crossroads in his life and trying to figure out what to do. And each setting is different. There's an apocalyptic setting, basically post-apocalypse. There's a dystopian setting and then a more utopian setting. And they're each set in Orange County in California in the same place. And there's actually a character that connects them all. I can't remember Tom's last name, but old man, I keep thinking of his old man, Tom. Who's this old guy who's in all the, in all the books. But what's interesting, no.
Does he sing?
It begins with a B, though. His last name does begin with a B, come to think of it. I can't think of it. But the interesting thing about doing those as movies would be to use the same actors in the different roles. Like have the guy who plays the young protagonist, who's three different people, be the same actor for all three roles, and have Tom Barner be the same guy for all three movies. But at the same time, embrace what Robinson's trying to do, which is produce these variations on a theme of the future. I mean, one of the things he's doing with the whole series is he's trying to call into question the sort of, you know, predictive idea of science fiction. Say, look, there are so many ways the future can go that, you know, in this very constrained situation, I can imagine, you know, so many options, and here are some of them. And he really wants to kind of play with the idea of the future and play with our ideas of how things can go. And it'd be interesting to see a director and a committed cast try to bring that out. So I thought that would be a great choice.
Very cool.
And like I said, I think it could be filmed with, like, the filming itself wouldn't be as big a deal as trying to figure out how to tell the story and how to get the variations. Because what you don't want, and what Robinson tries to avoid is just sort of producing them as, you know, alternate timelines precisely. There, he really tries to make things different in each situation. Although there are tantalizing connections between them. But I think that would be really interesting to show and try to do as a series of movies. So that was my thought. I had another thought, which was C.J. Cherry's Morgaine cycle. I actually just found out it's been optioned, and someone's supposedly working on a screenplay for Gate of Ivril. But yeah, that would be tough. But that would also be another challenging one, really. Not for the literary nature of the story itself, but for trying to, you know, do the narrative and do with the character, especially Morgaine, who can be a really enigmatic character at times. And by at times, I mean most of the time. So those are, that's what I thought of for, you know, thing I would like to see made into a movie.
Very cool.
When I tried to think of Knot, pretty much everything else came up.
But before you go into Knot, I just want to throw out there that the option thing happens all the time.
Yeah.
And doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Yep. Sarah and I actually talked about that a little bit before the podcast, or not talked, we exchanged, you know, Facebook postings about that briefly.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead. I'm good.
So you said everything else is your no?
Well, I was trying to think of, like, is there one that I would pick out? And, you know, it's like there's a lot of books I don't think would work well as movies. Okay. Especially in the category of books I love, because I tend to like really difficult literary stuff. And I was actually joking a little while ago about about the idea of different visual, like I was thinking solely about movies, but when you brought up, you know, oh, it could be any visual medium, I merely thought stop motion animation Dahlgren. Let's make it happen.
I would be so behind that. Like a lot of psychedelia, or maybe like animated in the old heavy metal style. That'd be great.
Yes, Mobius does Dahlgren. That would be pretty incredible.
So heavy metal has been on your mind since I mentioned it last time, hasn't it, Django?
I think it has. I may need to go watch it again.
I tried to think of books, and the one that I decided to settle on was I would not like to see Ursula K. Le Guin's The Dispossessed made into a movie.
Okay.
Because I think they would just screw it up. In terms of, and again, like I said, one of the criteria that I have is that I'd like the movie to try to address the themes the author is trying to bring out and project those into this different medium. And I think that would be kind of difficult with The Dispossessed. Because there are some difficult issues, and there are also some really problematic issues with The Dispossessed that you'd have to try to ameliorate too. And I think that would be hard to do without sacrificing some of what Le Guin was trying to accomplish with the narrative. So I think that's definitely one that would be at the top of my list to not try to make. And having seen them already try to make her sort of less, you know, controversial and convoluted stuff into visual media and fail, Wizard of Oz. I don't think they could really. And I've seen. Has anyone seen the Lathe of Heaven PBS movie?
No.
It's like the mid-80s, I think it came out. I actually saw it, and I was like, I think it was not too long after high school that I saw it. And then I went out and read the novella, and I was like, that's terrible. How could they do that? And it was like a bad Star Trek episode.
Yeah.
You know, is there ever any movie that's better than the book, though? I was trying to think of that the other day, and I couldn't think of it.
Willow is much better than the sequels.
My go-to for that is Fight Club. The movie is, like, I went and read the book because I'm like, books are always better than movies, and it's just not. The movie,
really?
Like, they added so much to that movie. It's hands down better than the book. But it helps that the book is only like 100 pages long, so like it's almost a novella, and so it fits neatly. I like that a lot.
But what I think was it David Fincher who did Fight Club? David Fincher?
Yes.
I think he did what I would like to see someone do with a movie. He actually was able to pull out of you know, Chuck Palahniuk's mess some interesting things to explore, and he explored them. And he actually pushed it. He had no problem pushing stuff to uncomfortable streams.
I mean, I think the prerequisite to making a really good movie or TV show out of a book is someone in charge who not only likes the book and you know, really believes in it, but sort of gets it at a basic level. You know, that's why, for example, I think the Game of Thrones TV series is so good, and a lot of other you know, TV to fantasy fantasy series to TV adaptations have not been good, is because, you know, clearly the people who originated that are just in love with it and love the books, and it's not just like, oh, this is popular and we can make a bunch of money off it.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you know, I just saw the Ender's Game movie. Yeah, I know. Well, the thing about the Ender's Game movie, it wasn't incompetent. It didn't feel like, man, this is just a crap movie. But, like, it missed everything that made the book good, so there wasn't anything there. And it, you know, so it just didn't work.
Gotcha. Okay, so I'm going to throw some stuff out there.
Go for it.
Things that I would like to see made, and I don't want movies. Now I want, like, Stars or HBO to make them.
Yeah.
You mentioned CJ Shara. I would like her Fortress series, because I think that would play well on TV right now, given how popular Game of Thrones is. I also think we need to see a Wheel of Time series at some point, because that series is actually finished.
Wouldn't it be like 5,000 episodes?
It would be awesome.
I thought there was a rumor that was happening.
Oh, there's always rumors.
I'm not... Okay, there's always rumors. Never mind.
There's rumors. Yes. I would like to see Howard Andrew Jones' Desert of Souls optioned by Disney and made into an animated film just to piss him off. Again, as far as like epic fantasy, very dark, very HBO Game of Thrones-y, I would like to see J.B. Jones, the Sword of Black, or no, Sword of Shadows series.
Cavern of Black Ice, or...
There's a whole series of them. It starts with Cavern of Black Ice.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
And I would love to see that made into a series, because I think they could do that well. Also, on all of these, I would demand that Sam Raimi not be involved.
How about Michael Bay?
No.
Uwe Ball?
Because Raimi is the guy who did the Sword of Truth series. He Xenophied it. He Xenophied it and Herculeed it. And so it was not very good. And then as far as things that I don't want, I would love for Hollywood to actually stop trying to make Anne Rice movies.
Oh, thank you.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I'd also like them to stop trying to make Alan Moore movies.
Oh, please. Yes.
No more League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. No more any of that good stuff. Just stop. And if I could do anything at all, I would actually... want to be able to travel back in time and stop the channel formerly known as Sci-Fi from producing a Dresden Files television show.
Did they do that? Wow.
Yes, they did. Know. It lasted
Wasn't it just a season?
Yeah, like 13 episodes. And it was
bad.
Although I have to say, if I was going to go back in time and change media history, I would probably want to rescue the Star Wars prequels. Like, be like, George, don't do it. Put someone competent in charge.
Yeah, okay, I'll let my friend Steven Spielberg do it.
Oh, God.
No! Did you see the thing where they said that E.T. was originally supposed to be a horror film?
Really?
Yeah, wow. And it morphed into something completely different. Anyway, so those are my picks. Those are your picks. I encourage our listeners to tell us what they would like to see made into a movie or a television show or something like that, and also what they consider to be like hallowed ground that should never be touched by those types of mediums. I want to thank everybody for coming on. We're going to go through some final thoughts real quick because we're running out of time. Sarah, any final thoughts on this topic or any other?
No, I have no final thoughts. I'm boring.
What was the TV show that you were complaining about on? You said, was this actually a TV show or something? I saw you say something like that on Facebook. I don't remember what it was now.
I don't know. I say a lot of stuff on Facebook. I have no idea.
Was that when we were talking about the James S.A. Corey stuff being optioned?
I don't remember.
Her TV show?
No, she was actually complaining about a series that was on TV right now. I can't remember. Was it Dracula?
Yes.
And you said the only reason you watch it, the only reason you watch it is because of the guy playing Dracula.
Yeah, Jonathan Rhys Meyers. I really, really appreciate the fact that he was born. He's very attractive. But that show is the dumbest show that I have seen in a really long time. It's just total cheese. That's all it is cheese. And I don't know. But because he's really nice to look at.
You don't care for steampunk Dracula?
You know, it's just stupid. It's just, there's nothing there. I just sit there and think, I wonder how many bored housewives are watching this show with me because they're bored and they're housewives. And I, you know, and then I think, well, I'm doing the same thing. So I can't really, that's all it is. It's just cheesy romance with the hot guy pulling everyone through it. That's it. Anyway.
Don't you love his American accent?
God, I'm serious. Everything about that show is just stupid, but I'm watching it. So whatever.
John, final thoughts on this or any other topic?
I totally random. I had this flash of insight. I just realized the guy who played Harry Dresden in the Dresden Files series is Quentin Lance on Arrow.
Correct.
Which blows my mind because I hated him on the Dresden Files.
Yes, he's the Black Canary's father, and he's British, by the way.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes, he is American accent.
He's got a name like Oakstaff or something, right?
Yes, his American accent is much, much better.
Blackthorn.
Yes.
It's called Blackthorn.
Blackthorn,
right?
Yep.
No, I didn't know he was English. That's amazing, because actually he's very good on Arrow. He does, his accent is that sort of urban kind of New York-y kind of accent. Is that New York-y? I don't know.
Yeah,
it's kind of this thing, you know, and I'm a cop and I talk tough like a cop.
Yeah, he does good. The Jonathan Rhys Meyers, he just like drops his voice an octave and growls. That's how he does the American accent. But
well, he went to the Christian Bale School of Acting, so
I guess he must have.
It's what he did for Tutors too. He just kept lowering his voice as Henry got older.
Yeah, but it seems to be what he does. He needs his voice different. He just lowers it. And that's what you're going to get from him.
Well, it's better than Avery Brooks, who just raises his voice when he wants to emote.
Did anyone else ever wonder why Christian Bale's Batman does the bat voice when he's talking to himself? There's parts of movies where it's like, I wonder what the Joker is doing now. Why am I talking like this? It's just me in the room.
It's a sign of multiple personalities. He's not talking to himself.
That's what I was about to say.
Because the Bruce Wayne voice is the fake voice.
See, there you go. Because he's
Django. Not clever.
Django, I thought of another thoughts. Series. I'd love to see Peter Hamilton's Void trilogy or the Pandora Star books. I think would be great as a TV series if you had
But I was wondering if they'd be too complex for TV.
I think if you had a good like adult-oriented animated series, I think it'd be great, because like the special effects would be fantastically expensive to do live, because it's like, you know, a complete future universe and everybody's weird looking. But like in an animated series, I think you'd do a great job. You know, an anime guy, I'm kind of used to the idea that an animated series can actually like address real topics. But I'd like to see more of that on US TV.
However, this being Hollywood, what would happen is they would option that as a sitcom with Mark Harmon and Kat Denning.
Probably. I'm really looking forward to seeing the Expanse books, if only because I'm really curious as to how they're going to do the gravity, because most of those books take place in microgravity, because they're like on these ships that are thrusting and they have thrust gravity, because Ty and Daniel kind of take their science relatively seriously, but like filming that is going to be impossible, so I'm not sure what they're going to do.
All right, let's go ahead and finish this up. Let's do websites, Twitter, all that kind of stuff. Django, why don't you start?
My website, so it's DJANGO, WEXLER, djangowexler.com, or @DjangoWexler on Twitter. You know, come and say hi. There are many ways. That's me.
My woefully underutilized blog is jhstevens.wordpress.com. And I am far more active, as some of you know, probably to your chagrin, on Twitter as Erudite Ogre.
And you've got the Three Horsemen.
Oh, and the Three Horsemen, right. Those other guys, yeah. Yeah, that thing.
Yeah. Sarah?
You can find me on bookroomblues.net, or I post every other week on SF Signal for Special Needs and Strange Worlds. And you can find the annoying people on Twitter as at Bookworm Blues, or find me on Facebook, facebook.com/bookwormblues.
Alrighty. Thanks to everybody for coming on. And as this is a holiday week here in the States, we have Thanksgiving on Thursday. This is going to be our only episode. So you won't see one on Thursday, just the Monday episode. But we will be back the following Monday. So listen for that. Hope everyone has a great holiday and eats tons and tons of turkey. Unless you're a vegetarian, in which case I hope you don't eat tons and tons of turkey. But we'll see you next time. Bye. Thank you for listening to the SF Signal podcast. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the link to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com, and you can also search SF Signal in iTunes to find the feed. To comment about this or any of our podcast episodes, please call our voicemail line at 720-277-9082. If you enjoyed this podcast, help us boost the signal by telling your friends. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melts featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SFNF field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, new author spotlights, movie reviews, videos, science fiction, fantasy, and horror tidbits, free fiction roundups, and the new genre-related crowdfunding roundups. Click the RSS button in the sidebar to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou Romeo?
Angry robot.
Wah, wah. Thinking and crap.
And scene.